Okay, welcome back everyone to our second installment in the Youngs of Woodmere this summer on the halachos of coffee, which we already gave a little bit of a disclaimer last week. That's sort of a ploy. It's just really halachic topics in Or HaChaim that happen to also relate to coffee and tea, other hot drinks, things like that. But we're focusing it around coffee just to center our discussion around something to keep it organized, to keep it focused, to keep it directed. Last week we started with an interesting come in. There's a lot of it's a pretty packed house, but there's some seats in the front. They're in the middle if you want, and back also. So we started last week with a very strange. If you weren't coming in, you don't have to stay. We started last week with a very strange question. We began with asking if coffee was mutter, meaning if you could drink coffee. Simple. Can you eat caffeine? Can you consume caffeine? Can you drink coffee? And then we discussed if you're allowed to drink coffee before davening, with milk, without milk. We mentioned a whole bunch of things. It is important to note, not so important, but that's probably why I forgot last week, but it is interesting to note that if you read the right books, which maybe not everyone does, but if you read the right books, you'll see that a lot of the Gedolim did in fact drink coffee. The reason probably why people don't usually read the books that I read is because it's very depressing. Every book that I read, the main character dies at the end because I read a lot of biographies. But if you read these biographies, if you read these history books, you'll see that the Gedolim really did use coffee, did use tea. The Chassam Sofer used to have coffee and cake every breakfast. The Baal Tanya definitely drank coffee. The Mittler Rebbe also has a Maisa where he made Havdalah on coffee that we may get to in future weeks, whether you're allowed to make Havdalah on coffee. If you read some more modern books, you'll also see this. There's a lot of interesting halachos that also come out of it. The Chassam Sofer and Rebbe Kiva Eger had a big machlokas about whether you would make a bracha on the sugar that's in the coffee separately from the coffee. And other halachos, like the Chassam Sofer used to go to sleep at, let's say, 2 o'clock and wake up at 6 o'clock. He only had 4 hours of sleep, and he would go to sleep fleishiks. I don't know why he was eating fleishiks at 2 o'clock, but okay. And he'd wake up, he'd still be fleishiks, but he would still have his cup of coffee with milk, which is an interesting marmakum if you're learning basar b'chalav, which we're not. But the point being that there were gedolim that did drink coffee, so that's a smach for us. Huh?
Before
davening? Before davening, I'm not sure. Maybe davening really quick. The way they say is that the chassam sofer davened for a very long time, so I don't know how that would work, so maybe it had to be before davening. Okay, another kula. But anyways, we have what to rely on with these Gedolim stories as well. Neglected to mention last week, but let's move on. So we started last week with a very strange question. So let's begin this week also with a very strange question. And before we begin with that strange question, let's just make one note. The note is that the topic of the shir is the bracha on coffee really shakal? So if you had to answer the question now, I think we all know the end of the shir, right? It's not shakal. No, it is shakal, right? The halacha is going to be at the end of the day that it is shakal. I think we basically know that. So what's the point of wasting 2 hours, 3 hours, however long we're spending here, talking about the halacha, talking about the details, figuring out what bracha to make on coffee? The answer is twofold. One, you'll probably, if I deliver the shir well enough, you'll be on the edge of your seat at some point, wondering if coffee really should be shakal. That's first of all. And second of all, there are a lot of dinim along the way that we're going to figure out. A lot of dinim that relate, don't relate so much, that are the basis for the bracha on coffee, for the bracha on tea, for the bracha on different food items we'll talk about. And you'll see, you'll glean from here different halachos in different areas of your life. In Hilchos Brachos this week, next week in other halachos areas, different things you'll learn along the way. So it's not always about the title, it's not always about the maskana of the shir, but it's also about the pilpul, about getting there, about the mahalach all the way up until the very end to figure out what we could learn from these different topics. So try to stay focused, you know, space in, space out at the right times, and figure out, you know, the halachas that we can learn from here, even if it's not limited to the title of this year. So let's start from the very beginning of the process. What does coffee come from?
A bean.
A bean. Okay. Beans in general are what, bracha? Usually they grow from the ground. A coffee bean is not as much of a bean as you think it is. I only discovered this on Google like last week. A coffee bean is not as much of a bean as you think it is. It's actually more similar to a cherry or a berry of some sort. It's a lot fatter. The bean is on the inside when you cut away from the bigger fruit. It's actually more of a fruit, and it doesn't really grow from the ground. It doesn't really grow from a low bush. It goes from a tall bush, more similar to a tree, that will oftentimes last for 20 to 30 years, says one blog. But that's the extent of my research. Yeah. But it's similar really more to a fruit, more to a cherry, and because of that, you have to start thinking about Hilchos Brachos a little differently than a regular bean. The Gemara in Brachos, on Daf Mem, tells us that if you have a tree which grows perennially, describes it in Aramaic, but we'll call it grows perennially, so then you make a ha'etz on that fruit that comes from that tree. What in the world does that Gemara mean? So the Gemara says it means that when you pluck off the fruit, it grows back. So what does that mean? What grows back? That's a huge machlokas rishonim. Rashi understands that what it means is when I pluck off this fruit from this tree, that branch can produce more fruit later on. Without doing anything different, without planting a new tree, without starting a new process, it can produce more fruit.
Jonah, why involve ourselves with this discussion? question at all. You can compare it to orange juice. If you eat an orange, we know it's AIDS.
Good.
If you turn it into orange juice, it's
good.
Taco.
So you.
How is that going to be any different?
So depending on how the rest of the shiur goes, you may or not be completely right. But you're definitely somewhat right. You're definitely somewhat right. We're not dealing with the bean, but I'm happy the first was here. Very nice. But you're right. We have to get there in a couple of minutes. But just to start, where we're coming from is that the bean would actually be ha'etz, the coffee bean, because it comes from this tree where it's more of a tree than a bush, as we established, and the fruit do grow back perennially. Some of the Rishonim take issue with the exact definition of that tree, but it doesn't really matter for our discussion. The assumption that we'll work with is it would probably be ha'etz. But let's say it's ha'etz. So what, right? Exactly your question. So what that the bean is ha'etz? When you drink your cup of coffee in the morning, do you have any coffee beans in there? Hopefully not. Not even crushed ones. You don't want the sediment. You want the mud at the bottom. You probably don't have the coffee beans in there. So you're not really making a bracha on a coffee bean. What are you making a bracha on? A liquid. Really, it's a water. It's a water that was cooked through with coffee beans, crushed coffee beans, depending on the process in which they did it. But it's a water, ultimately. So really, we should start with a much more basic question, seemingly more basic, which is, what bracha do you make on water? Now, I want full participation on this one. Really? Okay, Jacob, yeah, you got this. No, yeah, you're good. Yeah. Shackle, correct. Rabbi, water is
Rabbi
generally shackle. What?
Rabbi Willig says no.
Oh, Rabbi Willig told me that he gave a shiur about this also, so maybe we'll touch on some of the things. You'll tell me if he had any other ha'aras. But I didn't get a chance to talk to him since preparing this, but yeah, I heard he did speak about this. So the bracha on water is shackle. Now let's just step back for a minute and see how simple that really is. The Gemara and the Mishnayos in brachos in the Parak Ketzad Mevarchim discuss Ketzad Mevarchim, how we make brachos. The Gemara is discussed, the Mishnayos and the Gemara discuss various types of foods, all different types of foods, and what bracha we make on those foods. Fruits, vegetables, mezonos, everything. So there it's very simple, very obvious. The Gemara says that the bracha on water is shehakel, as our star Talmud Chacham in the audience explained for us. So that is what the Gemara says, that's true. But is it so obvious? Is it always true that water gets a shehakel? Or is it always true that water even gets a bracha at all? So says the Shulchan Aruch, based on the Gemara in Brachos and Memdal, the Shulchan Aruch is in source number one on the list over here. Hashose mayim letzimo, a person who drinks to quench his thirst, source number one on the source sheet on the right side, mevarech shehakol. If a person drinks to quench his thirst, he needs a drink and he's going to enjoy it in his throat, in his mouth, he's going to enjoy the drink, so then he makes a shehakol. Aval im chanaktei umtza, but let's say the guy is pushed, he's choking, he has something in his throat, he can't clear his throat, he's stuck. In order to pass what he's choking on, to get it down, so he drinks some water, but not really for the enjoyment, not really to quench his thirst, not really even to cleanse his palate, but just to get that thing down his throat. Eino mavarich lo lefana v'lo la'achrov, says the Shulchan Aruch, based on the Gemara in Brachos, he does not make a bracha, not a shakel, not a brain of Hashus Rabos, he does not make a bracha on the water if it's simply to pass something on which he is choking. It has to be something he's drinking for his thirst. If you look to the left, in source number one, the Mishnah Berurah points out, kol she'achich ne'ene me'amayim, anything from which your palate gets benefit, gets hana'ah, if it's the water is giving you a benefit, is giving you hana'ah, if you're enjoying the drinking of this water, it doesn't have to be dafka for quenching your thirst. But if you enjoy the taste of water, you want it during your meal because you have a good time when you have some water, says the Mishnah Berurah, that counts also. And the Be'er Halacha tacks on one other case, right underneath that Mishnah Berurah, written by the same author as the Mishnah Berurah, named the Mishnah Berurah. Just kidding, the Chavetz Chaim, also not his name, Rav Yisrael Meir Kagan HaKohen Cook. No, not Cook, Kagan HaKohen, good. So the Mishnah Berurah in his Be'er Halacha says that you would also make a bracha if you did the following. Let's say you ate a little bit of a meal, and you're having some trouble digesting. You want to kind of get the food to settle a little bit better. Not you're choking, you're digesting. Pashut simple, you just had a meal and you're trying to get it down perfectly. Says the Be'er Halacha, if you're drinking to just help you digest, to help you process that food, process that meal, so that would also give you a bracha of shehakel on your water. So three samples of when you would make a bracha on water, on simple H2O. You would make a bracha if you were thirsty and quenching your thirst, if you were enjoying the water, and if you were trying to help yourself digest. There are poskim who disagreed. The Bar Ilan responsive project points you to a Shalosh Shuvos Mishnah Halachos or Menashe Klein. Someone asked him, I saw that the Mishnah Berurah says you should make a bracha if you drink water to help you digest. Do you think that's the halacha? So the Mishnah Halachos starts by answering. He says, you're asking me if I agree with the Mishnah Berurah? The Mishnah Berurah writes a Mefurish Halacha, and you have to ask me what I paskin? The Mishnah Berurah I paskin. That's the first line. The next six paragraphs disagree with the Mishnah Berurah. So he gave the guy a bop over the head, he gave him mussar, but at the end of the day, he disagreed with Mishnah Berurah, and he said he's not sure the minig is really to make a bracha if you're just drinking water to digest. But he's not sure the Mishnah Berurah is correct, but Rabbi Forst, in his classic work on Hilchos Brachos, the laws of Brachos, paskins that really we do agree with this Mishnah Berurah, we do agree with this Be'er Halacha. You do make a bracha if you're drinking water to digest.
In that case, I'm assuming you've eaten a meal and you've made a bracha. Would you have to make a separate bracha?
Oh, good. So that's actually excellent that you made that point. So the Be'er Halacha, see the dot, dot, dot? So if you look at those dots carefully, they're actually cutting out exactly your question. And the Be'er Halacha asks that, and he gives the answer, which is the next words: "Nafka mina mizeh lehecha deshos acher berkas amadon kedei lishro." So you made a hamotzi, you had your meal, you benched, and now you're like, I want to kind of digest a little bit better. So now you'd make a shackle. But yeah, if you were in the middle of the meal, you probably would not make a shackle. Only if you washed, okay, or if you had wine, or if you had another drink. But yeah, correct.
If you're saying a share and you just want to lubricate your throat.
So I assume that's what Rabbi Willick spoke about, because that's what he does a lot. Yeah. He drinks a lot of water. So what would he say?
Well, he does say charcoal, but I think he says his father doesn't.
Okay. What do you do? Yes, my father, I guess. Do the opposite. Okay. So that's the halacha over here. Okay. So that's the halacha over here. So what about, does this tell us anything about soda, about Snapple, about a flavored drink, something like that? So the answer is no, it doesn't. A flavored drink, no matter what you're drinking it for, it's always assumed you're getting some benefit, always assumed you're getting some hana, and therefore, if it's not water, it will automatically get a bracha. Only water do we have this chiluk as to why exactly you're drinking it, and there's a lot of details, yeah. So to take pills is another example of where you probably would not need to make a bracha. You have to determine whether you really want the water, though. Sometimes I know I need to take a pill, but it's also the morning, and I like to have a drink of water, you know, before davening or something to get ready for davening, you know, get a little spike before davening of water. Even though I'm taking a pill, but I'm also going to drink the water for myself. Every case will be subjective. The halacha is objective, yeah. If you would take a pill and there was no ulterior motive, so you would not make a bracha, correct. But it's not true by other drinks, as we just said. Okay, so the water does not always get a bracha, that's true. But it is true, at least we've established, we would think, that every time it does get a bracha, it gets the bracha of shahakol, right? So actually, that's not so simple either. If you look in source number 2, the Gemara in Brachos Nadaf Lametes quotes an interesting case. It quotes a case of Maya de Silka. Maya de Silka is water of vegetables. What in the world is that talking about? So it's talking about the following, that you're in the kitchen, you're cooking a dinner for the night, and you're making a nice soup. So you want to make a soup, so you put in, onions and carrots and all types of vegetables. Doesn't sound so good, right? Okay, chicken's a vegetable or no? You put all these things into a bowl of a pot. What do you want to give this year? A boiling pot of water. You set it on the stove and you cook up these vegetables in the water. And that way you make the water very tasty. All of the juices from the vegetables mix with the water, and it's a wonderful mixture. And it becomes Maya de Silka. It becomes vegetable water, basically. So the Gemara says Maya de Silka Kisilka. The vegetable water, if you cook vegetables in water and now you want to drink that water, so you would make the bracha of the silka is the vegetable, so you'd make the bracha of hadama on that water. Meaning, the Rishonim explains to us, the Rush primarily, that the water takes on the status of the vegetable that it's just been cooked with. Meaning, the vegetable has its own special taste, that taste is transferred into the water, and the water is transformed from water to vegetable water. Or like watery vegetables, whatever you want to call it. But it's something new, it's something different, and it takes on the bracha of the vegetable that was in it itself. So this type of water, apparently, would not get a shakel. This type of water would get ha'adama. Now, the Mishnah Berurah qualifies, in case anyone's asking about this, in source number 3, I think we have it. In source number 3, he points out that we're not talking about soup with vegetables in it. Let's say I cooked up that pot of soup, and I made the water very vegetable-y, and then I left the potatoes, I left the rice, I left whatever else we put in there before, the carrots in it, take out the rice, I left the carrots in it, and it's a vegetable soup with chunks of vegetables, so then it obviously gets a hadama. You're eating vegetables, you have chunks, pieces of vegetables in your soup. We're talking about a different case. You made a soup with all these vegetables in it, the soup soaked up all the tastes of the vegetables, and now you drain the soup. Now it's just broth. Or you came home late from work and everyone in the family ate all the vegetables and all that's left is broth. But either way, the soup is there, the water is there, but the vegetables are gone. In that case, you just have water that's flavored by the vegetables. What bracha do you make? Says the Mishnah Berurah, that's our case. And the Chiddush of the Gemara and the Chiddush of the Din in Shulchan Aruch, as it's quoted, says the Mishnah Berurah, is that even in that case where there's no vegetables left, you still make a hadam on that watery vegetable, you know, concoction that you have left over without the chunks of vegetables. So this is a very important Maror Makom, especially for us, because what is coffee? Coffee is beans, oftentimes crushed up, okay, but it comes from beans that are ha'etz, coffee beans. And what do? We cook them in water, and then what? We filter out the beans. So it's true that we don't have the beans in there anymore, so we shouldn't make ha'etz, because we're not making a bracha on the beans, we're making a bracha on the water. But seemingly, what did we just do? We made a watery coffee bean, or a whatever we call it, or a flavored water that was flavored by this coffee bean. Yeah, but how do they make that with the chemicals and that? It's not all from vegetables and all that.
Fruit.
Yeah, but okay, you have to figure out the ingredients. But so if you find me a, if you could ask a similar question by orange juice, that would be good, you know, juices. Yeah, good. So we'll talk about all those things. But we're talking about here coffee and tea. But yeah, apply it to, like we started with, it applies to other areas of halacha also. So you've now cooked these beans that are really ha'etz into your water. You've taken out the beans. It's true. But you still have this watery coffee-flavored drink in front of you, so shouldn't that be ha'etz? There is a major qualifier. There's a major modifier here in source number 3, the second Mishnah Berurah, Sifkat and Yud, in Siman Reish Hey. The Mishnah Berurah says a crucial qualification. He says, V'dafka kisheshalkan kedei lechol gamas ha'yirakos. So what was he talking about? He says, the case where you make a hadama on such a watery concoction is only in the case where you were cooking this water in order to cook the vegetables. But if you were cooking it just to flavor the water, if the whole purpose was really just to flavor the water and the goal was to drain the vegetables out of it eventually, so in that case you would not make a hadama on the water. If you made a soup with a lot of chunks of vegetables, then the vegetables are gone because you drained them out because you decided not to eat them, or you're on the diet, or the people in your house already ate them. So then the soup was made for the vegetables also. You were cooking the vegetables and the soup. So now even the broth keeps the bracha of hadama. But if you have a case, says the Mishnah Berurah, a very important thing from the Rishonim, if you have a case where you made this liquid only for the liquid, from the beginning to the end, all you wanted to do was flavor the water and get rid of the vegetables, or flavor the water and get rid of the coffee beans. If you had a case, such a case, where you made the drink out of the fruit or the vegetable with no intent whatsoever to maintain that vegetable or that fruit at all, says the Mishnah Berurah from the Rishonim, in that case, it still gets a shahakal. It doesn't get the bracha of hadama or ha'etz, depending on what we're cooking exactly. So seemingly, that helps us with coffee, with tea, because you're taking these coffee beans. True, you're cooking them into the water. True, the water is now a watery coffee bean. True, even though you're taking them out, it would still get ha'etz. But says the Mishnah Berurah, not so, because you never had the intention to make this a coffee soup. You always had the intention that this should just be flavored water. And if it's just going to be flavored water, then it maintains its original, what we would have thought original, bracha of shahakal all the way through and through to the end. And if you look in source number 4, we'll quote the Kitzer Shulchan Aruch over here, but really a lot of the Achronim say this, the Kitzer Shulchan Aruch, as you see, the Parach Mata Aaron says this most famously, the Shvos Yaakov says this, the Shari Tshuva is Messiah, a few people who say this. Different Achorim say this, that this applies to coffee and tea, even though they are made from things that are ha'etz and cooked into the water very well and make the water very tasty, still say these Achronim, you make a shahakal on coffee and on tea. The Kitzur Shulchan Aruch goes on to add one more thing. He says, V'lachim brachan al tea, oh, see source number 4, al coffee shahakal. V'chein al ha-sheikhar. You know what sheikhar is? Beer. Bein shum yitmarim, bein shum yisorim. Whether it's made from dates, whether it's made from wheat, what? Hops, whatever, isn't that made from wheat, sort of? Whatever it is, but so it's made from these things that are really different brachos. Wheat would be more of a mazonos type of bracha, and what was the other thing? Date beer, dates would be ha'etz. So even though it's made from things that have different brachos, but since we have this idea that you're not making it for the fruit, you're not trying to make the fruit better, you're just trying to make a flavored water, says the Mishnah Berurah, says the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, says the other Achron, Mishus Yaakov, and everyone else, that you would make a shahakal because really your whole goal was just to make a flavored water, just to make a flavored drink. So let's review for a second. We had a bean that we started with that wasn't really much of a bean at all. It was really more of a fruit. So we determined that we'd start with ha'etz. Good. Then we had some water, and the water we said was generally shahakal, although sometimes it doesn't get a bracha at all if you're taking a pill. If you're not really thirsty, you're just trying not to choke, depending on which willy you are, if you're clearing your throat during a shear. And we determined that if you are making a bracha on water, it is usually shahakal, but if the water was cooked into vegetables, there will be cases where the water will take on the status of a hadama. Namely, if there are vegetables in the soup, obviously it'll be hadama. If you made a vegetable soup and the vegetables are now finished, the soup would really maintain that bracha of hadama. But we said, we clarified, according to the Mishnah Berurah, according to the Rishonim, that if you had our weird case, where you're using the vegetables only to flavor the water, but never have any intent of consuming or keeping those vegetables, so then the water, the drink, would really retain the original bracha of shehakol. So seemingly, we have a clear, neat, easy, I hope, answer to our question, is the bracha on coffee really shehakol? And we said, yeah, it really is, yeah. Right, so that's a great question, and it gets very complicated, as you probably could tell. So chicken throws everything off also, because chicken, meat, things like that, really take on the major, ichor status of the soup. The most important thing that I want in the soup is really, depending on who you are in the house, but you really want the chicken or the chicken flavor. So that could throw everything off. That's a big monkey wrench in the whole operation. But it's a good question. So you have to determine each soup a little bit differently. We made a simple soup. I cook simple. I cook a couple of vegetables. I threw in rice at some point. That's it.
What's so complicated? Chicken is a shahakos.
Yeah.
There should be no complication there.
What if there's vegetables in there also? What if it was vegetables in there that you drained out?
What's the ichor?
So that's what we're answering. Yeah, that's what we're answering. That sometimes it'll be that the chicken is the ichor, so it'll take over. The meat's the ichor, it'll take over. But there will be different soups that will be more complicated. Sometimes you have a lot more vegetables than you do chicken. Sometimes you have noodles in there, lakshin or rice or something like that to figure out each case. But this wasn't a shir on is the brachan soup really shakal.
Chunky, a pea soup with meat in it. Then you have somebody who doesn't eat pea soup at all except for that pea soup with meat.
Right.
So one may make an adam, one may make a shakal.
Maybe, or maybe both of them would make a shakal because the meat's so important objectively. Who knows, right? But yeah, these are all topics that need to be discussed separately. But okay, good. So in order to understand where we're going with this, so we have this clear, easy, simple answer explaining why coffee is shehakol, because really we're just making flavored water, coffee-flavored water. But the Achronim really give us a roadblock here. They really give us a tough question. In order to understand the question, we're actually going to stop and go way off topic. Not as much off topic as you'll see at the end. It's another sugya in Hilchos Brachos, and it definitely relates as a mashal, as a parable, to what we're talking about. But in truth, it's just to help us understand what we're really going to get back to in terms of coffee. And let's go into the topic of what bracha do you make on chocolate? That's starting with source number 5 on the page number 1. What bracha do you make on chocolate? So that should be a toss-up also. What bracha do you make on chocolate? Right, so is that a silly question? Well, you guys got smarter. That's not a silly question. But so you were all mechaving through Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. He says it's not a silly question. You're right. It's not a silly question. It's actually a very good question. Let's get a little background here. The Gemara in Brachos Lamed Ches 5a on the source sheet, the Gemara in Brachos Lamed Ches Manal says there is a thing called Trima, right? Amar Le, Hahumi Rabbanon LeRava. Someone asked Rava, Trima Mahu. What bracha do you make on Trima? Tes Reish Yud Mem Aleph. Says the Gemara back and forth over here. We're not sure what the halacha is. Says the Gemara in the next bold, V'hilchasa Tamri Vav Dinhu Trima. If you had dates that you turned into Trima, you made it into Trima, Mivarchin Alayhu Borei Priya Eitz. You make a Borei Priya Eitz, and it says the Gemara, my time up, Masayu Kaimi Kidmei Kara. Because even though you did something to it, but it still remained at the end of the day, it's still dates, dates are dates, so you still make a Eitz on the Trima. Now there's only one question that we really need to answer here. What in the world is Trima? The Gemara doesn't say anything. I have no idea what it is. It's just some random Aramaic word. So if you look at the Rambam in Perek Ches of Hilchos Brachos 5b on the source sheet, Perek Ches Halacha Daled, the Rambam says that Trima is tamarim, dates, which were crushed to a pasty spread, like a date schmear. I don't know, whatever you would call that. So you crush these dates until they're just like this pasty little creation that you made over here. And now you're going to smear it on whatever you smear it on, or you're going to eat it like it is, like a pudding or something. So that's what this is. Says the Gemara, according to the Rambam, if you crushed dates till they're just a smear, till there's nothing left but a pasty spread, says the Rambam, Trima, that case of Trima, Mahu, what bracha does it get? Ha'etz, the Gemara told us ha'etz. So even if you crush dates and seemingly change them very much into a totally different, creation, says the Gemara, says the Rambam, that would still get ha'etz, that would still get the bracha of ha'etz, it wouldn't change brachas. But if you look in 5b on the left side, the Truma Sadeshin has a different understanding. The Truma Sadeshin is really working in Rashi, because Rashi on the daf does not understand like Rambam. Rashi on the daf in Bracho says that if you crushed fruits, if you crushed fruits a little bit, and there were still chunks of the fruit left, you crushed dates, and there were a little bit of chunks left, then it would get ha'etz still. That's what our Gemara is talking about. Says Rashi, if you crushed fruits to a point where they were just a pasty spread, they would get a shehakol. It would be a new item, a new entity, a totally new creation, this paste, as opposed to the original fruit that it was. And therefore, we get a new bracha, a bracha of shehakol. The Truma Zadeshin points out that Rashi elsewhere has a steer, has a contradiction to this. So the Truma Zadeshin offers a chiluk, offers a distinction that is very important. This is the part that everyone should key in on right here. The Truma Zadeshin is in source 5b in the bold and the underline, whatever that whole mix-up over there. The Truma Zadeshin says that there are two types of crushing, two types of pulverizing that you could have by a fruit. If you have a fruit, like a date. So a date is normally eaten whole or sliced. It's not normally crushed. So if it's not normally crushed and you crush it, what bracha does it get? Says the Truma Zadeshin, according to Rashi, it gets a bracha of shehakol. Because you made a new thing. This isn't dates anymore. This is date spread. It's something new. Some new creation. So it gets a new bracha of shehakol. It's downgraded from its original bracha of ha'etz. But what if you have a case of a fruit or a vegetable or something that is always, or most of the time, crushed and pulverized into this new entity? What if you have a type of a fruit or a vegetable that is, it's almost always, 99% of the time, crushed, broken down, and made into a spread, made into a new entity? What if you had such a fruit or such a vegetable? We'll see soon if we have such a thing. What bracha would you make in that case? Says Rashi, according to the Truma Zadeshin, that case you'd make ha'etz. Why? You crushed it. It's the same exact thing, seemingly. What's different over here? So the Truma Zadeshin explains that in a case where you crush a fruit that's not normally crushed, so you understand it used to be dates, now it's date spread. It's something different. It's a new thing, so it gets a shehakol. But if you have a fruit or a vegetable that is always produced, cultivated, manufactured to become, the end product always is this shmir, this crushed item, this pulverized fruit. So then, when you grow the fruit in the ground, it's really for the ultimate goal of the crushed item at the end. It's really always towards that ultimate goal of having that spread or having that crushed thing, that new entity at the end. And so, in that case, you can't really call it a new entity at all. It has to be looked at as the original thing. When I grow this item, it's grown for this purpose, so it retains its original bracha of ha'etz. What example would there be? So before we get to our example, which is more obvious, so if you look in source number 5c, you'll see spices. Besamim shchukim. You have spices which are crushed up and then are mixed together with sugar. So the besamim are considered the ikr, says Shulchan Aruch in Reish Gimel in Orachaim, says Shulchan Aruch, the besamim, the crushed spices, are the ikr. They are the main staple of that food. Umevarich alein kedin birchas osan besamim. And because they are the main part of the food, you make the bracha of ha'etz on them. You make the bracha that the original bracha that these besamim originally had. What do you mean? They're crushed up. Why do you still make the same original bracha? They're crushed up. They should be shehakol. What's the answer? Says the Mishnah Berurah in 5c. In the middle, the Mishnah Berurah says, "Afilu hachi lo nishtanas berchasim." We don't change their bracha. Al yedei zeh lekulei ama d'derech habesamim lichtosh beofen zeh. Because the way we use these spices, the way we use these besamim, the way we use them, the way they're manufactured always, is we have them from their original thing and we crush them down into this concoction and consume them that way. So if that's the case, when you crush your besamim, you're not inventing a new thing. You're not making a new thing from ha'etz to shehakol. You're just finishing the original intention. You grew it in the ground for this purpose, and now you're finishing the product at the highest level that you intended the entire time. So it retains its status, its original bracha of ha'etz in this case. Oh. So if that's the case, come back to chocolate. So how would you guys say about chocolate? So we have a thing called cocoa beans. They're ha'etz to start. Good. And then what do we do with them? People eat them? Like 1% of people, I don't know, some people eat them. I think nowadays it's even more popular because it's very healthy to not mix anything in the cacao powder or something they mix. But generally, people do not eat coffee beans. They don't even eat coffee beans without sugar in them. They eat chocolate. So every time a person cultivates, grows, manufactures these chocolate beans, so ultimately what do they do with it? They make a Hershey's Kiss out of it. They make a chocolate bar. The point of growing the chocolate bean is always, or almost always, for the intention of making chocolate, of making the sweet, delicious food that we call chocolate. Says of Shlomo Zalman, why, if you flip over to page 2 now, source number 6, why in the world do we make a shehakol on chocolate? Chocolate, it's true, the original ha'etz item was crushed down. That is true. But we just saw from the Truma Zadeshin, from Rashi, that was quoted in Shulchan Aruch and in the Mishnah Berurah, that is not the case if this is the way we always use this item. If we always use this produce and crush it down and make the same product every time, then it will always maintain its status as ha'etz. It will never change to shehakol because it's not a new creation. You planted a cocoa bean for the purpose of chocolate. You didn't make anything new when you crushed it down and created this Hershey's Kiss or this chocolate bar. So that's what Shlomo Zalman asks. There are other things you could ask us about. Anyone here eat soy products? Yeah. So soy, what is it? It's a bean, a soybean. And what they can make out of it? What do they make out of it? Milk. Tofu. What? Tofu. That's like power of chicken and stuff, right? Milk, oil, all types of products. Doesn't look anything like the original bean. It's pretty crushed, right? It's pretty pulverized. And yet, what bracha do you usually make on those items? On a parv, on a tofu, on a soy milk? You make a shakli. You don't make a hayetz.
What about peanut butter?
Peanut butter, so your friend from Gateshead, Taka, okay? We have a member of the UK, originally, whatever. Or not originally, but sometime. So Rav Pesach Eliyahu Falk, right? Dying in Gateshead. So he has two beautiful sarim called Masa Eliyahu. I only own the second chelek. First one is a little too expensive for me. But in the second chelek, he has a tshuva about all these things. And one of the things he does discuss is peanut butter. And he says that some rabbi in America did research and claimed that most peanuts are produced to make peanut butter. Really?
I guess they are.
I eat peanuts like regular. I don't know. But if that's the Matthias, then maybe, same question. Maybe it should really be Hayetz. Good question. So anyway, so that's what we're dealing with over here. So Rosh Shlomo Zalman says, I have a major question. Sorry, peanuts are an exemption. Correct. They're an exemption. They are hadama. All other nuts are hayetz. Correct. Sorry. What's the joke? There's three brachas you make on nuts. You make hayetz on most of the nuts. You make hadama on peanuts and mazonos on donuts. Yeah. So we'll try to cut that one out of the recording. So we have this big question from Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. How could it be that we make a shehakel on chocolate? It's the product itself is made always to be replaced chocolate, and we're asking about soy also. So there are answers given for soy, but Rav Shlomo Zalman does not write about it. But I found an amazing find. There's a beautiful book called Ma'adani Shlomo, which was written by Rabbi Yachmiel Fried, if anyone has anything to do with Dallas. He has a kol in Dallas, I believe. So he was a Talmud of Rav Shlomo Zalman for a long time. So this book is filled with stories, psukim, things he talked to Rav Shlomo Zalman about. So he asked Rav Shlomo Zalman, if you're talking about chocolate, what about soy? Should soy be the same thing? So Rav Shlomo Zalman answered, by chocolate, the cocoa beans used for one thing and one thing only, chocolate. Soy, it's used for all types of things, meaning there's soy milk, soy butter, soy tofu, soy, I forgot what else we said, oil, all these different things. So they're all made from soy, that's true, but they're all different. So you can't pin it on any particular product, so you can't make hayetz on soy. Chocolate, he said, is always directed down the line. The cocoa bean is always directed towards the line of chocolate. It's always crushed for chocolate, so really we have the question over there. Now here's the real question. This is an important stories and tangents that we're about to take. What bracha do you think Rav Shlomo Zalman would have made on chocolate, given what we just said? Hayetz, right? He proved it thoroughly. If you look in the copy over here on source number 6, you know what his answer is in the tshuva? Tzarech Iyun. He does not give an answer. He doesn't understand why we make a shakel on chocolate. So you would think if he ate chocolate, he would make a hayetz. He wouldn't make a shakel. But if you look, they quote in different books, there's a beautiful sefer they just published. It's a commentary on Igros Moshe, Rav Moshe Feinstein's tshuvas. So he basically takes different tshuvas of Rav Moshe Feinstein and he brings other poskim who spoke on it. So it makes it easier to prepare a shir if you're talking about something in Rav Moshe's tshuvas. But there he quotes an article in a Yeshurin journal. And in that article it says a fascinating story. It says one time Rav Shlomo Zalman's grandchildren came over to the house and Rav Shlomo Zalman gave out chocolate candies to them. And the grandkids, they were wise, so they said to their grandfather, you know, Zaidi, what bracha should you make on these chocolates? So Shlomo Zalman said, what bracha you make on chocolate? What kind of question is that? You know what bracha you make on chocolate. So they said, no, but doesn't Zaidi say in his book that chocolate should really be hayetz? So Shlomo Zalman answered, this is the type of question you ask Bubby, not Zaidi. He said, some things, it's a minug. So, okay, so I have a kasha, and a big kasha. I don't even know the answer, says Shlomo Zalman, one of the Gdolei Ador, the Gadol Ador of that day, definitely in Eretz Yisrael. The biggest person in the world has the biggest kasha that he does not have an answer to. And yet he tells his grandkids, follow what's normal. Follow the minhag olam. Don't go off trailblazing new things against the minhag Yisrael for so many years. I'll tell you even more. In that article, and also Rabbi Yerachmiel Fried quotes this, that he saw it with his own eyes, that apparently Rav Shlomo Zalman did at one point eat chocolate. He witnessed this. And he made a shehakel. He made a shakel. He did not make a hayetz like his question. He did not. He pushed away his kavod, and he said, "This is minhag Yisrael. This is the way it's really supposed to be." So he made a shakel on chocolate himself, which is very, very fascinating. And there's another story which I think relates a little bit. My wife told me she read this in one of the magazines. I don't remember which now, either Ami or Mishpacha. That Shlomo Zalman has a very illustrious grandson-in-law Rav Zalman Nechemya Goldberg, which people have probably heard of. So his wife is Rav Shlomo Zalman's daughter. That's how he became his son-in-law. Perfect. So Mrs. Goldberg was a teacher in one of the schools in Eretz Yisrael, and the teachers in this school, every day, every week, they used to have a little chabur where they would learn together halachos of Shabbos. Now, if you're learning Hilchos Shabbos, the go-to sefer for any person in Hilchos Shabbos is Shmiras Shabbos Kelchasa. There's no person's Shabbos in the entire world that is not affected by the sefer Shmir Shabbos Kelchasa. Shmir Shabbos Kelchasa was written by Rabbi Neubert, who is a Talmud and a close Talmud of Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. So most of the psakim in Shmir Shabbos Kelchasa are really from Rav Shlomo Zalman. So Rav Shlomo Zalman's daughter is learning with her friends, with her co-teachers, co-workers, this book, Shmir Shabbos Kelchasa, and they're learning Hilchos Shabbos. And one week they discuss the halacha that when a woman lights candles before Shabbos, so she's mekabel Shabbos at some point, when she makes the bracha, when she lights candles. Rabbi Schechter gave shir on this last year, two years ago. So this is a very complicated thing. When she mekabel Shabbos, should she make the bracha first? Should she make the bracha second? So one of the things that's a complicated issue is, can she blow out the candle after she lights the candles? So some poskim say she can blow out the candle, the match. She can blow out the match. But other poskim, amongst them, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, paskin, you don't blow out the match. You drop the match on the little non-flammable, hopefully, plate you have over there, and it goes out by itself. But you shouldn't blow it out, because at some point you're a Makabal Shabbos. That's what Rav Shlomo Zalman says. Now they were learning this halacha, and they turned to Rav Shlomo Zalman's daughter, and they said, "Nu, did your mother do this?" And she said, "No, I'm pretty sure she didn't. I'm pretty sure my mother blew out the match every single week before Shabbos." So they said, "How could it be? Rav Shlomo Zalman paskin against your mother? It doesn't make any sense." So if you knew some of my Rabbanim, you'd understand. But in this case, it was a real question. How could it be that Rosh Shlomo Zalman's wife did against Rosh Shlomo Zalman? So she went home and asked her siblings to make sure to confirm. And all of her siblings confirmed that Rosh Shlomo Zalman's wife blew out the match after she lit candles. She did not let it fall to the plate like Rosh Shlomo Zalman had said to do. So what's pshat? So the other siblings explained to her, by Rosh Shlomo Zalman, it wasn't about his psak. It wasn't about his kavod. It wasn't about what he thought was right. He thought this was right. But there are 150 other poskim who thought the other thing is right too. So in certain cases, he has to put his foot down when he thinks, you know, this is do or die, when he thinks this is a big deal. But there are cases where it's tali b'hari kodesh. It really has very good foundations. There are other poskim who say this. So what do I need to bother my wife? Al titosh toras imecha. This is what she saw by her mother. Her mother got it from her mother, and it came from gedol and from poskim before me. So I don't need to make a fuss about this. Let her follow the minhag olam. Let her not step out of line and do something against everyone else. Let her follow the minhag olam, because it's not about my psak, not about my kavod, not about my kashas. It's about what, you know, what the minhag Yisrael is, keeping it together, keeping everything clear and comfortable. And so Shlomo Zalman really lifts shitaso, that even though he has his kashas, but that doesn't always determine exactly how a person is supposed to act. Rav Moshe Feinstein, in source number 7, you'll see over here in Igros Moshe, it's not a question about chocolate that he's asked. He's not asked what the bracha on chocolate is. He asked a different question, but it comes out from this question what he holds about chocolate as well. So let's describe the following case. He was asked, let's say a person has chocolate-covered raisins. Okay, chocolate-covered raisins. Some, my Achilles heel. Okay, not really, just dramatic. So I want to eat chocolate-covered raisins. What bracha do I make? There's raisins, which are ha'etz, and there's chocolate, which is shakal. So what bracha should I make? So says Rav Moshe, there's a Mishnah in Brachas on Mem Dalet, which says there's a din of ikar v'tafel. You have some foods which are the main part of the food mixed with a secondary, non-primary part of the food. So you have cereal with milk. So your cereal is mizonos, and your milk is shakal. What bracha do you make? Mizonos. The main food is the mizonos. You have crackers with butter, so you would make a brach on the crackers, not on the butter, because there's ikar, and there's tafel, there's main, and there's secondary, not primary. Says Rav Moshe, so how do you figure out what exactly is the ikar and the tafel in the case of raisins and covered by chocolate? How do you figure it out? So Rav Moshe says he's not sure, because really, if you look in the bold and the underline, people want both of them. They didn't buy chocolate, and they didn't buy raisins. They want chocolate and raisins. And since they want both, says Rav Moshe, I don't know how to decide which one's the ikar. So therefore, says Rav Moshe, that the bracha on chocolate-covered raisins is both. You would have to first try to nibble away. If you had another raisin, so you'd make a ha'etz, and then you'd make a shakal. But if you didn't, so you'd have to nibble away a little chocolate with a shakal, and then you would have to make a ha'etz on the raisin underneath. That's what Rav Moshe paskin. Just for the halacha shabbat, you should ask your, if you have this Achilles heel like I do, so you should ask your local Orthodox rabbi, because it's not so simple. A lot of people don't agree with Rav Moshe on this. A lot of the posts can bring up that you should go by rov, whatever the most, the biggest part of the food is. And if that's difficult, if there are other ways to determine or enforce paskins, in this case, you would make a ha'etz, you would not make a shahakal. He quotes Rav Eliashiv about that. You would make a ha'etz, not shahakal, not like Rav Moshe. But anyways, Rav Moshe says you would make two brachas, shahakal and ha'etz, But we're not talking halacha l'maisa, we're just talking about the yesod. The yesod that you see coming out of this, though, is what did Rav Moshe think the bracha on chocolate was? Shahakel. Pretty clear, he thought it was shahakel. So Rav Moshe also thought, like everyone else, like the Minhag Olam, against Rav Shlomo Zalman's question that the bracha was shahakel. Just another interesting story, an interesting excerpt that shed some light on this as well, that Rav Moshe passed in that it was shahakel on chocolate. So there's a story in the book Rishume Aaron, which is written by Rav Aaron Felder. He has a lot of stories with Rav Moshe Feinstein in there. So one of the stories he writes is that one time he went to Rav Moshe and he asked, you know, should we really make ha'etz on chocolate? I hear the kashas, I hear the question, should we really make ha'etz on chocolate? Rav Moshe said, the answer is no. I'm not sure why, but I know one thing. If Klal Yisrael has been doing this for so many years, I don't know how long they've been eating chocolate for, but if they've been eating chocolate for so many years and making a shahakel, so it's our job to figure out why the answer is no, but the answer is no, you stick with the Minhag Yisrael. So even the people in the other camp, even Rav Moshe Feinstein, who wasn't like Rav Shlomo Zalman on this, but really behind all of that was the importance of trying to figure out why we're right, not trying to prove ourselves wrong. So let's go back to everything, okay? So we started with a bean, not even a chocolate bean, we started with a coffee bean. The coffee bean was at 8, so we mixed it with water and we had questions about water. When you do make a bracha, when you don't, when it's shahakel, when it's not. We came out saying that it's really a shahakel on coffee, because even though you're cooking a fruit, a bean, inside of your water, and you're flavoring the water in a very delicious way, so even so, since you never had the intention of keeping that fruit, you never had the intention of keeping that bean in there, it was always for the intention just to flavor the water, so it would never go to the status of ha'etz, it would stay at a shahakel. That's why coffee is shahakel. Then we went on this tangent, and we said that really the achronim have a major question. These achronim are the panim iros. If you look in source number 8, they have a ban kasha, the panim iros. Other people quote this. The Shari Tshuva quotes it in Siman Reish Beis, I believe it is. The Shari Tshuva quotes this panim iros, who asks that seemingly we have the same question that we had by chocolate. Why are coffee beans produced? Why are they cultivated? Why are they manufactured? Why are they crushed? What are they made for?
Coffee.
Yes, there are people who have coffee beans. There are people who have coffee beans on their pudding. There's people who have coffee beans covered by chocolate. There are such dishes.
Coffee, ice cream, coffee. Okay.
Interesting. Okay, didn't think of that. But some of those are probably with artificial flavoring, but you're right. But let's just talk Rove at least. The majority of coffee is really produced. I'm sure a lot of coffee ice cream is even produced out of coffee, not out of coffee beans, but whatever. We're both making it up, so who cares? So most of coffee, really, at the end of the day, is produced for coffee beans, is produced for coffee. So really, says the Panim Me'iros, I have the exact same question. I come and I sit down to my nice hot cup of coffee or cold cup of coffee. It's a water, it's a liquid, it's the sediment is gone, the mud is gone, there's no more coffee beans in there. And I've determined that it's really flavored water. But at the end of the day, why were those coffee beans planted? Why did we produce these coffee beans? Why did we crush them? Why did we cook them? Always, always for coffee. So I have the same question, why is coffee not ha'etz? That is the Bam Kasha of the Achron and the Panim Me'iros. Based on this idea of chocolate that we just explained, we understand better now that once you crush something down, it usually loses its bracha. That's true. But we said the very simple exception is when it's rove, the normal usage of that fruit, the normal usage of that vegetable, that bean, that whatever it is, besamim, the spices, is to crush it down, is to produce this new entity. So then it's not really a new entity at all, and it maintains, it retains its original bracha, ha'etz adama, given the case. So again, why is coffee shahakel? Again, we changed our question now. We used to ask, is coffee really shahakel? But given the Rav Shlomo Zalman or Moshe's approach, why is coffee shahakel? Why is it true that we make a shahakel on coffee? So, fascinatingly, the Panim Me'iros gives an answer similar to Rav Shlomo Zalman. Tzarech Ian Gadol. He does not know the answer. He thinks the bracha on coffee should be ha'etz. That is the bracha on coffee, says the Panim Me'iros. Says the Panim Me'iros in source number 9, Aleph, the right side, the first answer to our question, even though I am 100% convinced that coffee should be ha'etz, but Minhag Yisrael Torah, Minhag Okar Halacha, I will not paskin that you should actually make ha'etz on coffee, says the Panim Me'iros further, bold and underlined in source 9 Aleph, V'chein ani nohig, shelo lios min ha'matmiyim, so that people don't throw things at me, that I don't look crazy, so that I'm not a wonderment in the eyes of people, I also make a shahakel on coffee, avaladina yesh lanu l'chalik b'chilukim, and then he gives a bunch of different lumdish things, but the point is the Panim Me'iros says, I don't know the answer, but the answer is shahakel. I don't know the answer, but the minhag, and the way I'm knowing, and the way I would tell my children to be knowing, etc., like Rav Shlomo Zalman, like Rav Moshe Feinstein, you make a shahakel on these items, even though we have questions. That's the first approach. But are there any better approaches that we can give? Can we actually give any answers? So look, or there are two other answers that are actually answers to this question. If you look in source number 2, These makoros are basically from Rav Shechter Shlita's Sefer Be'ikve Atzon and Simen Vav. Rav Shechter builds a beautiful yesod, a beautiful foundation, based on the following makoros. Tosfos and Brachos and Lamed Chesem and Aleph ask a fascinating question. They ask that beer is made of what, we said before?
Hops,
which are really a wheat product, which are really a grain.
Barley.
Which is, okay, barley, good, fine. Which is a grain. I'm not wrong about that, right? Okay, fine. So it's a chamishas mi'e dagan, so it's a mazonos, and you make it into a drink. So says Tosfos, why isn't beer mazonos? He says, not only is it made of mazonos things, it might usually have a kezias of mazonos within any given drink. So why don't we make a mazonos on beer?
We certainly treat it as chametz.
We certainly do treat it as chametz, correct. Yeah, that is true. So it maintains in that way, but we do make a shakel. I mean, personally, I'm not going on record as having ever drinking beer or drunk in beer, however, I don't want to say drunk, and that's for sure. Okay, whatever. Okay, never mind. But the point is that we certainly do not make a... do not make a mazonos on the beer. So what is pshat, says Tosos? So Tosos gave three answers. The third answer on the sheet over here is the ode, Bishasiya Omer Shahakal, says the Tosos, that there are two different types of things we consume in this world. There are beverages and there are foods. Foods have different types of brachos. Some are shahakal, some are mazonos, some are ha'eitz, some are hadama, all different types of brachos. Beverages get a... this is coming back to the original thing. Beverages get one bracha and one bracha only, that is shahakal. Wine is a different story, so no reason to bring it up. I mean, there is, but not right now. But beverages get a shahakal. That's what Tosfos say over here. And the Rosh Shechter points out that there are many other places where you see this. The Magen Avraham, Sim Reish Hei, Sivkat and Vav, the Prima Gadim in two places in the Mishpat Zos Zahav, Paskins this way as well, and Reish Dalat Tes Zayin, whatever, in different places. The Prima Gadim says that this is so, that beverages get a shahakal. And if you look in source number, again, 9 bays, in the middle, so the Mishnah Berurah seems to say it as well. The Mishnah Berurah says, "She'ein mevarchim borei meinu mazonos ella al Michael." He's asking the exact same question. No, I was not saying your name, Dad. He asks the exact same question. He says, "Why do we make a shahakal, not a mazonos, on beer, on scotch, even though it's made of mazonos items? Because we only make mazonos on food. We do not make mazonos on beverages." Rav Shechter collects different sources where you see this chiluk, this distinction between beverages and foods, and one of them is extremely interesting. The Kozhuk Lava Rebbe, the Eretz Tzvi, Rav Tzvi Fromer. So he was in Lublin. He was, I think he was killed in the war. He has an interesting article that was never published in his Chuvos. It was published in a Torah journal, I think it was called Amma Torah, which I was able to find and look up. Rav Shechter quotes it, I didn't know it on my own, but I was able to look it up online. Thanks to Otar Chachma. And the Kozhuk Lava writes an interesting tshuva because he wants to know, how is it that all these people, I think he's probably talking about the Hasidim where he was, but all people in general, oftentimes Shabbos morning, people want to make Kiddush. What do they make Kiddush on? They make Kiddush on a revius of wine, a cup that holds a revius of wine. But oftentimes you see people at a Kiddush make Kiddush on something else. Little schnapps, right? But not so schwer, okay? Schnapps could be Chamer Medina, it could be considered a very chashiv, significant drink, and you could use that for a Kiddush, for Avdala, but interestingly, they put it in a tiny little cup. A cup that maybe holds a kezias, but certainly does not hold a revius. It doesn't hold a couple of ounces of liquid. So how could it be that you have a standard in Kiddush that you need to use a revius of the drink, and then you can make Kiddush, and yet with scotch, with schnapps, they're making Kiddush on these little shot glasses, these little l'chaims of Kiddush. So how could it be, says the Kozhuk Lava. So he explains, because we're looking at it all wrong. We think of scotch as a drink. If it's a drink, it needs a revius. Says the Kozhuk Lava Rebbe, scotch is not a drink. A drink is something you drink as quenching your thirst, something you drink fast, smooth. Scotch, you sip in small increments, you drink it very slowly in the middle of a meal. It's something much more similar, says the Kozhuk Lava, a big chiddush, that it's something much more similar to food. And because it's food, the standard is different. You no longer need a revius, you no longer need... some people probably would prefer to make kiddush on a revius of schnapps, depending on how much they like the schnapps, but you no longer need a full revius, you need a kezias, you need just that small shear, and maybe those shot glasses actually have a kezias in them. Really fascinating kiddush by the Kozhuk Lava Rebbe. Rav Shechter points out that there are two major problems with this. One is that Rav Chaim Volozhiner points out that if scotch is really a food, which he thinks it might be, so if scotch is really a food, Rav Chaim Volozhiner says, it's not Chamer Medina, you can't make kiddush on it. You can't make kiddush on your pretzels, you can't make kiddush on a food that's not Chamer Medina. Challah is different. You can make kiddush on challah. I think more preferably Friday night. You're allowed to do that, but any other food, you're not allowed to make kiddush on your ragalach. You have to make kiddush on a drink. So if it's really a food, you just messed up the whole thing. You gave me a shear of kezias, very nice, but you also gave me no kiddush on this. Secondly, says Rav Shechter, you have to come back, not the other one, don't worry. Says Rav Shechter, you have to come back to this Tosfos that if you really think that schnapps is a food, then what bracha should it get? Should get a mazonos. It shouldn't get a shahakal, because the whole answer of Tosfos was that the reason why we don't make a mezonos on schnapps, on whatever, on beer, whatever drink we're talking about, made out of chameshes mina dagan, the reason why we don't make a mezonos is because it's a drink, not a food. But if the Kashrut Glover Rebbe is right, and it's a food, then really you should make a mezonos. So you can't make kiddush on schnapps, says these different marmakomos, for two reasons. One, it won't actually be a drink. Two, meaning it'll be a food that's not chamer medina. Two is that it'll be a mezonos, so you're not even going to be able to make a shakal. And the third source is that really that's such a chiddush of the kashrut glover anyways that it should be considered a food that you can make it on a kazayas. So the whole minig is very questionable. You have to look into the sources on that, whether that's really a reliable thing to do. But anyways, the Prima Gadim in Mishpasos Zahav in Siman Reish Beis says coffee is a beverage, coffee is a drink, and since coffee is a drink, it gets a shahakal. It does not get a ha'itz, even though we have sufficiently proven that there are reasons to say that the coffee bean is produced only, or at least mostly, to make this drink. Even so, says the Prima Gadim, since it's a beverage and not a food, it will not get a ha'itz, it will get a shahakal. So that is the second answer. The first answer was that we don't know the answer. But minig Yisrael Torah, minig Okar Alacha, we make a shahakal even though it should be ha'itz. That's the first answer. And we saw the Gedolim said, I make a shahakal even though I have a question. The second answer we're giving is that coffee is a drink. Drinks get shahakal, even if we have kashas, even if we think that it should be ha'itz, but it's a drink, it's a beverage, so it sticks with a shahakal.
Jonah,
yeah.
One problem with that. There's some people who use coffee as a stimulant, which makes it a drug, and could also be harmful. Would we make a bracha on something that potentially could be harmful?
I don't know
if you have the answer, but I throw that out there because.
So it's something we spoke about. It's something we spoke about last week. It is something we did not speak of whether you make a bracha on it or not if it's harmful. That is a discussion if you make a bracha on something that's harmful. But I think that I think they don't say it's harmful anymore. I think they say to drink too much of this.
Go back and forth.
Yeah. So we'll talk about last week's shir to get back into that. Yeah. What?
They're also getting enough.
They're also getting enough from it. Okay, yeah. It's something we need to discuss more from last week about the mitzias of coffee. But anyways, there is a third answer. There's a third possible answer the Achronim give. I quoted for you here on 9 Gimel from the same Dayan that we mentioned before, the Machzeh Eliyahu, or Pesach Eliyahu Falk from Gateshead, just because his sefer is so amazing and so clear, and his writing here is very clear. But other Achronim say the same exact answer, and the answer is as follows, that there really are two types of pulverizing something. We have, let's say, our case of date paste, right? We keep coming back to that. You want to make a schmear out of dates. So you crush the dates down, and you make them into this like new thing that we'll call shahakal, because it's a new thing, it's a paste. It's no longer dates, it's like something else. But ultimately, it's date-flavored paste, meaning it's the same thing, just in a different form. Since it's a different form, we'll make a shahakal, but ultimately, it's the same dates, just in a schmear form. But there's a different type of pulverization. Say, a mushel. He gives this mushel. So let's say a guy chops down a huge... Two huge trees. He slices the wood, he sands it down, he makes it smooth, he puts up four walls, a roof, whatever he puts up, different things for, and he makes a house. He makes a small house. So when a person walks by this beautiful house they just crafted out of this tree, what's he going to say? That's a nice tree over there? Oh, look at that thing growing out of the ground? No, it's a house. It was a tree at some point. The tree was cut up, dissected, smoothed down, and it was turned into a house. It was turned into a couple of rooms with walls and a roof. So you wouldn't call that a tree anymore. You wouldn't call it gidule karka. You wouldn't say that that house is growing out of the ground. It's a totally new thing. It's so far removed from its original state that you can no longer call it a tree. You call it a house. Says Rabbi Falk, says some of the Achronim, that's the pshat by chocolate also. It's true. It starts as a cocoa bean. It gets crushed down. And it's always crushed down for this purpose. That's why you grow the cocoa bean. This is what you do it for, to make chocolate. But at the end of the day, the difference between a cocoa bean and a Hershey's Kiss is so vast, so different, so large, the difference between them, you can't possibly be miyachis, you can't possibly relate it back to its original form, to its form as a cocoa bean. You can't make a ha'etz in it, because you can't look at this Hershey's Kiss and say it grew in the ground. You could look at date paste and say this date paste grew in the ground. It's crushed down dates. But a chocolate bar didn't grow in the ground. Cocoa beans grow on the ground. We changed it so much, we crushed it down so much, the difference is so vast that it's no longer even shayach, it no longer has any resemblance of what it used to be. Say, these achronim, that's why chocolate gets a shahakal, even though it's true that it's always crushed down for this purpose, since it's made in something entirely different, that he points out that you would never give a cocoa bean as a gift. But we know that you give chocolate as a gift to somebody. It's broken down so much, the difference is so great, that you would no longer make a ha'etz, you would obviously make a shahakal. He says the same thing is true about soy. And he doesn't say this, but perhaps that is also the case with coffee. It's true that coffee is ha'etz, the bean is ha'etz, and we crush it down, and it's always crushed down for this, or 99% of the time, or 95% of the time, it's always crushed for this purpose to make coffee. But at the end of the day, your cup of joe looks nothing like your average coffee bean. It's just so vast, so different, so completely new. It's a bria chadasha, yesh me'ayin. You would not possibly relate this back to the ground that it came from. You can't look at a cup of coffee and say, this grew in the ground. You can look at a coffee bean and say it grew in the ground. So therefore, we make a shahakal on our coffee. That's what these achronim say to answer the question.
Why can't you say the same about, say, a chocolate chip cookie that looks nothing like the wheat that grew in the field?
The wheat, in a the wheat would have been hadama at its original stage. The wheat grew in the ground. The
okay, but it becomes mazonos, and does it's, okay, because it has
right, to be. Right, right. So, but similar to bread, you don't make a hadama on bread, even though originally the original contents grew in the ground, because it's a new, completely new entity. Some of the Rishonim say that's what we're basing this on. So that's why coffee would really get a shackle according to this approach. So we had a basic build-up of why we'd make ha'etz on coffee. We knocked it down twice and got stuck at two different roadblocks, but hopefully we came to a conclusion that really Minig Yisrael is Torah, really Minig Yisrael is correct in this instance, and all of the Achronim in their own different ways give the third answer. Some of them give that middle answer that Rav Shechter gave us, that it's a beverage and not a food. And we have, either way, Minig Olam is something that we should follow. We should be normal. That could be the moral of this shir, I guess, is to be normal. Follow the minhagim, and Mirtz Hashem, Blinada, next time we'll talk about more, hopefully interesting topics related to coffee. Everyone have a wonderful day.